Hi, my name's Dave. I'm an alcoholic. Get it out of the way. I quit smoking like 3 days ago, and I kind of feel like I'm going to fucking die. So if I do, just call, end the meeting early. Don't need to make a big fuss. But I like speaking here. Thank you, Isaac, for asking me to speak. This is it's the first place I ever spoke at the other church. I remember I've been sober about 5 months maybe, and I was out front smoking a cigarette, and a guy was like, how long you been sober? And I was like, 5 months. He's like, what step are you on? I said, maybe eight or whatever step I was on. And he was like, okay, that's great, you're gonna be the 15 minute. And like I just started walking to my car. I was like, oh, yeah, sure, okay. And then I started walking to my car. My sponsor like bolted after me. He's like, where are you going? And I was like, that guy asked me to speak, like, I'm not doing that shit. And he's like, no, you have to. And he gave me a little spiel about service and all this stuff. And I went up there and just kind of talked for 15 minutes. I was very shy when I had gotten sober. I was like, just felt like the world was an awful place. And I spoke, and it wasn't the end of the world. And people came up and like knew my name after that. And they were like, oh, thank you. And I went home like feeling a little bit happier than I did before, you know. And so, yeah, my sobriety date, I guess I gotta go back, 11/25, November 25th of 2011. The last drink I had was on Thanksgiving. It was on the 24th that year. And, I was at my aunt's house, and I saw, like, some stuff in the bathroom, and I'd been in AA long enough to know that I was powerless over that stuff, and that I was going to take it no matter what because I'm powerless, and so I might as well just, like, take it then, you know? And so I did that, and whatever, woke up. It was, like, an unremarkable relapse for me. I mean, I'd been in much worse situations. This was no big deal. I was at my parents' house, like, in the room I grew up in, and my life, like, still sucked. No big deal. And it took me a while actually to come clean because I had a couple months before that. I mean, I really only had like one friend in the world and one sponsor, but it took me like a while to like work up the courage to tell them, hey, I drank on Thanksgiving or whatever. And then I thought maybe they were going to be mad or something. They didn't care. They said, thanks for being honest. And so I grew up like less than 2 miles from this room, so I didn't travel very far to get here. But thank you, I appreciate the drive down from Maine, man, and thank you for your lead. I was a normal kid. I was a good kid until I wasn't, you know, which was like about middle school probably when I took my first drink, and then I just started to do whatever the hell I felt like doing. And that was getting fucked up all the time. And, you know, it was kind of a nightmare quick. My parents were finding me, like, overdosed and stuff by the time I was 16, and they were sending me to the woods, and they were calling specialists and trying to figure out what the hell is going on with David. And I basically, like, I bopped in and out of rehabs for a couple years there, from the time when I was like around 16 until I got sober at 20. And it was all the same. It was like the first place, you know, I was, my parents were very much of the mindset like, you know, no one in my family's been to an AA meeting. I mean, I've got plenty of people that drink probably too much in my family, but I think I'm the first one to cross the threshold. And so they weren't thinking like, oh, David needs to connect with a higher power and to, you know, learn how to pray and meditate and build a network of sober peers or whatever. They were like, he needs to talk to a psychiatrist and he needs to figure out what it is in his mind and his past or whatever is that's causing him to do this. And I sort of felt the same way, that I was like, gonna go to this place, I was gonna learn about myself, I was gonna learn, you know, about maybe repressed memories and shit that I was like running from and stuff about my family. And then I was going to like talk about it. It's going to be a big cathartic breakthrough. And then I could like come home and drink a couple beers and smoke weed like normally. And like everyone could chill. But that place, I was there for like 90 days, and then they said this kid needs more stuff, like he's got to go back to the woods. I had already been to the woods when I was like 16, but they sent me to the woods again, and that sucked. And I got out. This place was like, you were in the middle of nowhere in Washington, and then they would send you out for like a month, and then you'd come back and you'd be in town. And like, you know, I go away. I love being in the woods. They always use it as a punishment when I was like a kid, but I enjoy it. And I would be fine out there, man. I would just like watch the sun go up and down and like go to sleep and feel just like, I would just feel good, man. And then I would come back into this tiny little town and I would just like go buy meth at the trailer park. I could not for the life of me tell you why that was. You know what I mean? Like what it was that was, I move like an animal. You know what I mean? Like no thought in any of this stuff. Just going where I felt drawn. And that was where I always felt drawn. I remember like they finally called me. It was like a tiny town. And eventually, like, word got around to the people that run this place, like, that guy's buying crystal meth at the fucking trailer park. And so they, like, call me in, and they don't know what to do, and they call my parents, and I'm, like, on speakerphone with the, I don't know what it was, counselor or whatever, and my parents, and they're just, like, you know, we found this shit in David's drawer, and it's just silence on the phone. And then my dad, after a while, just goes, well, there goes the money we spent on braces. I always liked that line, man. He's cool like that. I don't know. I basically, like, was sitting in that room, and I was like, this sucks, and these people suck. And, like, I called this girl I had met in town at the trailer park, and I just like split, you know. And that was the story of every treatment center I ever walked into. I split, and I would go in there often with the best of intentions. Like, this, I don't need to tell you guys, but this active alcoholism shit sucks, man. It hurts and it's miserable, and I want it to stop. And then I go somewhere and it stops for 2 weeks, 3 weeks, sometimes a month or 2 months. And then I forget, you know? I've got a short memory when it comes to that. And it's like, I don't forget and just all of a sudden go, I wanna drink again. I forget that like what I'm doing is life or death, and I forget that what I'm doing is a lot bigger than drinking, that I need to be listening to the people that have my like best interests at heart, that I need to be taking suggestions. I forget all that stuff first, and I start doing whatever the hell it is I want to do. And then I'm drinking, and I don't know how it happened. The only treatment center I graduated from was the one that, like, where if I left, I was going to go to prison for 7 to 10 years. And I, like, when I was in there, I remember being like, I can't stay in treatment. Like, I just can never make it happen. Like, I just go nuts at some point. So I was like, I told myself, I was like, I'm gonna lie to my psychiatrist, and I'm gonna tell him I'm hearing voices. And then he'll hit me with, like, the antipsychotics that'll just make me, like, passive and dumb, and I'll just be able to, like, plug through the treatment center and not go to prison. And And I did it, and I didn't go to prison. but yeah, so I don't know. My addiction took me to awful places. Like the reason I was looking at time was because I snatched a woman's purse, like to go get drug money, and like something I'd done a bunch of times. It's just living on the street and like had nothing else to do, and that's a gnarly, ugly, stupid crime. You know what I mean? That's not one of the cool ones. It's just like, that's just the person that does that is a piece of shit, you know? And yeah, that's what I did. So I had lost basically all faith in, I never really given AA much thought, despite going to all these places and here and being in so many meetings and having sponsors, actually. It never dawned on me that this was anything more than, like, friends, you know? That this was never anything more than the fellowship, and that it was just, like, maybe a place where you could go and want to drink but not drink together. That's what I kind of thought sobriety was, you know, just like holding on to my seat, wishing I could do something, but not being allowed to do it or whatever. I was stupid in a million ways, but that was one of the big ones where I could not see what was going on here. I'm glad I finally did. But I kind of became so, just felt so hopeless about all this stuff, about AA, and like I would go to these places and I would see people that have just been like doing what I was doing for decades and were just like in and out and in and out and in and out, and I was like, man, I can't do it. And so I tried to kill myself, and it didn't work. I was like in the hospital with a real messed up liver, and my parents, I hadn't talked to them in like over a year and a half, and they didn't know where I was or anything. And I called my brother, and I kind of like told him what happened, and he was distraught, man. Like, I didn't talk to him that much, but I think, I don't know what he thought about what I was doing, but it really seemed to catch him out of like off guard. And he called my parents, and he begged them basically to let me stay in their house, you know, and like wouldn't accept a no for an answer. My mom had gone to Al-Anon and stuff, and you know, they had pretty much cut me off and were done with my shit, and he forced them kind of to take me back. And so I moved back up to Tampa. I was in South Florida at the time, and I moved back up here, and like, I mean, I was just a zombie in my life. At one point, I stayed up for like 9 days, and it felt like I like cracked something in my head, and I had just like lost the will to like be a part of planet Earth. And so I was just like at my parents' house sleeping 16 hours a day until I was able to get a job. And then I would just like go to my job. I remember there was a Blockbuster right by this liquor store, and I would get a fifth of liquor, and I would rent two movies, and I would just go home, drink it, watch the two movies, pass out, and just like do it again. And like it was along that time that I started to like just kind of pop into Yana every once in a while, you know, and see, just to kind of sit there. And I knew I was on probation, and I had to get the sheet signed, and like I was really trying to, do probation correctly. And the guy that I had was just like, I mean, he was at my house, like it wasn't every night, but it felt like he was checking on me like way too much. And so I was at home, like, on curfew. I was, you know, drinking, but I was, like, so scared of what the hell was going to happen next. And one night when I was at the Friday night men's meeting, I just, like, I saw this kid I was, like, best friends with growing up, drank together for the first time, smoked weed together for the first time, and, like, he just gave me a big hug, and that was really fucking weird. And he started, like, calling me all the time, trying to take me to meetings and stuff. And, like, I just kind of, I was like, all right, at a certain point, I was just happy to have someone to talk to or whatever. And I started coming around to meetings, and, like, you know, I went to this meeting every Thursday for years. I was just sitting back there thinking about it. It was like Monday night newcomer at 33, 164 on Tuesday, fireside, this, men's, fever, Sunday night speaker. Just did that every single week for years, you know? And it was, I was pretty happy, I have to say. So I'm sitting there with him, we, like, get food afterwards. He had, like, just come back from culinary school. He was, like, real into eating. So we were at restaurants just after the meeting all the time, and it was taking up a lot of my time and stuff. And he was kind of talking to me about sponsorship, and I was like, you know, I've had sponsors in the past, and you know, I don't really feel like I need something like that right now. Probably, like, I think I'm stable, and like, it's probably gonna get better. And dude, he was like, he just was like, dude, I'll introduce you to my sponsor. Like, he's cool as hell. Like, you'll just like him. And I was like, okay, fine. And for me, like, sponsorship up until that point had always gone, you know, if you sponsor people, like, I'm the most common type of sponsee. 1, 2, 3, meet up once a week, 3 straight weeks, gung-ho, read over 4, you know, that's the next thing you gotta do. And then the phone calls become way less often, and then eventually they cease coming at all. And I've sponsored so many guys like that, and it really, like, breaks my heart, because I did that for a long time, and as soon as I broke that barrier, as soon as I did the fourth step, I did the rest of the steps, and I never drank again up until, you know, now, God willing, for a long time. So I get this guy, and, like, he was the perfect sponsor for me. I'd always sort of tried to pick my sponsor, be like, do I relate to this guy, is it blah, blah, blah. But this guy was like, he was just the anti-David, you know? I was completely, like, sad and self-serious and just miserable. And this guy was just, like, bright clothes. He had 2 little dogs. We would meet at that Starbucks on Howard, and he would come walking up with those dogs and, like, a visor on, and just chat with strangers, everyone, like, the barista. He was just cracking jokes and having a blast, and I was just, like, sitting there, like, shaking with, you know what, rage and depression, and, like, it was perfect. He really balanced me out, like, just met me where I was and, like, brought the whole thing to equilibrium. And I don't know what it was or what, but, like, when he gave me the assignment to do the fourth step, I did it. I, like, put pen to paper. And I had sort of, for step one, I was pretty much on board with step one from early. Like, I could see that stuff, you know, in my life and in my mind. That all made perfect sense. Step 2 and 3, like, I don't know, when I was younger, when I was first trying to get sober, I think I struggled with that more than I needed to. And then by the time that I was, like, fully just, the wheels had come off, I just didn't really care about step 2 and 3 or finding the truth of the matter, or, you know, determining whether God exists or he doesn't exist, or whether I should turn my will over my, I just like, at some point there, I just kind of like let go, trusted this guy with the tiny little dogs that he knew how to be happy, you know, how to not be me, and just kept going with the steps. And so I did 4 and 5, and like, for me, I mean, there was nothing in there in the inventory, I feel like, that had been like truly weighing me down, or I don't know that for me it wasn't like the big cathartic pop, but it was more like that I was finally doing an action in AA to, you know, I was doing what I was told for like the first time in my life, basically. And I remember after that, I felt very good, and I was sitting in a meeting, and I was like, man, like, everyone that's been sober has also done this, and like, I am now like one of these guys that has done this. I'm like, kind of, I felt a little bit more a part of AA than I had before that. And so I kept going, man. And I moved through the rest of the steps and started sponsoring other guys. And it was like, that I think was when I started to actually get a glimpse that like, there's more going on here than a social gathering of white knuckling or whatever. That this is something actually quite beautiful and quite like kind of mind blowing, and that someone like me can come here and do the stuff that is asked of me, and like not think about drinking. Because somewhere along the way, I mean, every other period of sobriety I had had, I was like I am with the cigarettes. I'm just like, you know, when's the next one? And when can I stop doing this? And somewhere along the way, that thought, that like recurring thought, fell away, and I was just in life in a mode that was completely new to me. And yeah, I was thinking about this too, because I'm like playing the same mental trick on myself with the cigarettes that I did with the booze, which was like, this is only temporary. I'm gonna smoke again. You know, I just gotta like lay low for a little bit, get everyone to like kind of be on the back foot, and then you know, when it's no big deal again, like, I'll do it. And I mean, when I was getting sober, I was like, a year. I need a year. Like, I knew that being a like broke junkie was just hell on earth. And I was like, if I could go to school, like get my GED, maybe like start getting a degree, get a job, get a little money, I could like try this from a different angle, you know? By the time that like a year rolled around, or I had gotten my GED, or I had started going to school, like, it just wasn't on my brain anymore. I was pretty concerned. Like, those first 5 years of my sobriety, I was about getting new guys at the halfway house and driving them to meetings, you know? Meeting up with them at Starbucks and trying to, like, match their misery with a little pep. And so yeah, I always think about that, and like, I mean, I guess that's the one day at a time thing, where it's, I know, I couldn't fathom being like a life without drinking. Just couldn't do it, even when things were horrible. But you know, a break, I could wrap my mind around a break, you know. Just a little breather, because I had been going a little too hard. Like I said, the first 5 years of my sobriety were pretty like regimented, in terms of, I knew what meetings I was going to, I always had you know, like five sponsees, handful of sponsees running around, like being of service. I didn't, was going to USF, and like, I just didn't, there was no real time for me to, I don't know, I just like, the minutes of my days were accounted for, and I was content. And that was like, that in and of itself is a pretty much a miracle, for that someone like me can not be miserable or not just sit at their house and crave drugs and alcohol and just like find myself there like an animal, like without any thought. And so, but when I had about 5 or 6 years, I moved to Miami to go to graduate school. And like, I really threw myself into my work, and like, just, it's tough. It felt like being new again, where like, I'm just not the kind of person really to like raise their hand. I'm not really the kind of person to, I don't know, like ask what you're doing after the meeting and then like go to want to go and hang out. And I like was in a new place, didn't know anybody, and didn't do that. And what do you know, like I'm alone. And so like I'd been in AA long enough to kind of know, all right, I need to get a home group, and I need to go to at least that every week. And so I did that, and like first business meeting, this group was like on the second story, and there was like the chairs sucked. They were like really heavy, and they were like, had to take them up this tiny elevator. And they were like, you know, that position is open, and no one wanted to do it. And I was like, I'll do it. And I did it every single week the whole time I was there, and like didn't do, like, you know, objectively speaking, didn't work a great program for about those 3 years, but like, those chairs were set up, man. And I, spirit of rotation, like, it never rotated. I was the chair guy. And, and it helped me to be like, well, I don't want to go to the meeting tonight. Like, I have shit to do. And, oh, well, what, that, she's going to have to finagle those chairs, like, into the elevator? I mean, come on, David, like, have a little self-respect. Like, go do the chairs, man. And so, yeah, I made it through. And I had moved away to graduate school at the exact same time as a friend of mine did. And we would talk all the time. And we both sort of made the same mistakes in terms of not jumping exact, like, where we were into AA, into the absolute dead center of the boat. And the only thing that, like, we did differently was that I went to that home group every week, and he didn't, and he ended up drinking. I mean, he's sober again now, thank God. But, like, I remember when he told me that, and he just called me and was like, you know, I think I was probably too young, and it was probably a big overreaction, you know, like, I think I can probably do this now. And I was like, all right, man, like, you know, I don't know the inner workings of your heart. And then, like, you know, 3 months later, I get a call. He's like, I don't think it was an overreaction. I think I gotta get sober again. but yeah, I remember thinking, like, damn, this home group has really saved my ass, you know? And like having that realization, being like, this is something that I need to do. I don't know. My life has been pretty beautiful since I got sober, and you can just take my word for it that it wasn't before I got sober. And I don't know really who to attribute that to other than like everybody in AA. Because when I think about what it is that I did to get sober, it's like, you know, sit with my sponsor for an hour 12 times or whatever, and like do an inventory and like call some people on the phone, like do what he said, and like what I've gotten in return is like a will to live, like a desire not to kill myself, literally, and a full life of friends and a wife. I'm having a baby later this year, like, and a career, and like, you know, I don't know, I've like achieved things in my life that were like lifelong dreams that I didn't think would ever be possible. And I don't know, on my own, literally none of that exists. On my own, it's me in a closet smoking crack until I get fed up and kill myself, you know what I mean? And I don't think about that shit unless I'm standing in a detox or in front of an AA meeting telling you about it. Like, God removed that from me by doing the steps, and everyone, like my sponsor, these guys I met in AA at the men's meeting, and like they just dragged me through it when I didn't know what the hell I was doing. And that's all I got. Thank you.